Good morning, Connecticut. And to our friends across the Sound, it's Director of Public Affairs, John Vokette. Thanks for tuning in to Connoisseur Media's award-winning public affairs program for the people, bringing you the latest information to help address concerns in our communities tied to youth, the economy, public health and safety, aging, education, and the environment. This Independence Day weekend, we're paying tribute to all the folks who grow the good food we eat, who are taking steps to grow their own, or who maintain their properties with organic standards in mind. We're going to play an encore presentation from our annual pilgrimage to the Northeast Organic Farming Association's Organicon Conference, which was held earlier this year at Wesleyan University. We caught up with NOFA's director, the event's keynote speaker, and a number of other guests promoting organic practices and programs that are enhancing our state's environment and public health while engaging our youngest citizens to participate and enjoy the fruits and veggies they can raise and eat from their own personal, school, or community garden. We'll be back with these segments and more on this encore presentation of the award-winning For the People with me, John Vokette, right after this reminder. AARP is now accepting nominations for its 2020 Connecticut Andrus Award for Community Service, which honors an outstanding volunteer who's sharing their experience, talent, and skills to enrich the lives of their community members. Besides the recognition, AARP Connecticut is going to donate $3,000 on behalf of the Andrus Award winner to an eligible nonprofit of their choosing. Do you know an extraordinary volunteer age 50 or over who should receive AARP's most prestigious Connecticut Volunteer Award? Well, the deadline to nominate them is August 1st, so link to the nomination form by calling 860-548-3169 or visit states.aarp.org/Connecticut.
All right. Well, regular listeners know every year we are so honored to be invited to support NOFA, Connecticut's NOFA, the Northeast Organic Farming Association. And we are at their 2020 Organicon Organic Gardening Conference here at Wesleyan University in Middletown, sitting here in the calm before the storm, I think, with Dina Brewster. She's Executive Director of NOFA. And Dina, thanks so much for being part of the program. First of all, tell us a little bit about the space we're in here. How did NOFA end up coming to Wesleyan?
Thank you. This is our first year at Wesleyan. Our conference typically moves around the state every couple of years. And part of the reason we are here is that our board president is a Wesleyan alum. Okay. And so we've had a connection to this place for a long time. Wesleyan is also for us, a sort of flagship university in terms of its approach to its food system and its land use as well. And so we were so excited to partner with them, and it seemed like the conference was a good way to kick off that partnership.
Yeah, talk a little bit more about what impressed you about what Wesleyan's doing as a university.
They have a student farm that's actually here represented today, and some folks who are really, I think, elevating the conversation that college students are having around agriculture. And as well, that even down to the dining hall that serves locally sourced food year-round. So they've had to work really hard in cultivating their relationships with local farmers as well to make that happen. We're hoping to see that trend all over Connecticut, and so to whatever extent we can accelerate that by shining a light on it, we're happy to do it.
Yeah. This is an organic gardening conference, but it is not by any means exclusive for farming and farm industry and agricultural industry people. So that being said, can you just explain to folks that are listening how they can get involved with NOFA if all they want to do is grow their own?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a really good thought. I think one of the things that has impressed me in the last year has been the diversity of our members and supporters. NOFA has really become a table at which many different stakeholders can now sit, whether it's land trusts, homeowners, advocates of any sort, organic chefs to people who want to find chemical-free food, as well as farmers and gardeners and landscapers who have been our mainstay over the years. So I think, you know, really this is such an the urgency of our time makes NOFA a really sort of keystone organization in our state for bringing together this kind of diversity from urban farmers to rural farmers. And there are folks here who are, you know, not even from Connecticut, frankly. And so for your listeners who want to get involved, the first and most the easiest thing to do is become a member so that you can sort of come into the fold and figure out what is going on around the state in terms of programming and everything else. But advocacy, we are learning, happens at all levels. So whether it is talking to the person who owns your grocery store or talking to your landscaper or figuring out how you are going to expand or contract your garden every year and how what your practices may be. All of that is part of the conversation that we're having today.
What's one of the most exciting things that you're seeing now across the landscape, aside from the diversity? Are there any new practices, any new legislation, any new initiatives that are really kind of fitting well with NOFA's mission and even firing you up more for what's happening today and into the future?
The choice of our keynote speaker, Niaz Dori, who's from the Northwest Atlantic Marine Alliance, is somewhat an expression of what is firing me up these days, that our the common mission that our land producers find with our fishermen is something that I think is going to move the whole food system forward. And Niaz Dori is here to talk about that. And we have a number of fishermen and oystermen who are and women who are here to join us today to, again, sort of diversify the landscape of our conversation. So I would say this reaching into and trying to build a bridge with the fishermen and fisheries community is something that matters a lot to me in the next year. Other projects that I think are worth noting are the one of our big initiatives in the last year, which is showcased here today, not only on the seed cleaning table that's up front, but also in a number of the workshops, has been increased focus on agroecology or conservation agriculture. So the ways in which farmers can partner with the conservation movement, agriculture and conservation typically have not always been at the same, they not always necessarily cross purposes, but not always work together as well as they should. And organic farmers are in a unique position to bridge those two communities. And so we have at NOFA the Ecotype Project, which we piloted last year and is now launching into a full-fledged program throughout the state, which is looking to wild collect native plants from around the state and use organic farmers to amplify the seed production and then nurserymen to get those plugs out to really rebuild habitats across Connecticut for insects.
At the same time, does that also create an opportunity to begin trying to get a toehold against invasives?
It does, and the invasive work is a big piece of that pie, of what the Ecotype Project is taking on. But really, I think what we are looking for is the durability of our farms, and that means focusing on emerging markets where we find them, niche markets where we find them, and making sure that as our movement grows, that we are casting as wide a net as possible.
Certainly, across our radio stations and podcasts and things, we have hundreds, maybe thousands of people who are engaged more professionally, including landscapers and small growers. So I would like to take an opportunity to just talk for a moment about the organic land care program and certification, which is quite unique and a real sort of resume point, if you will, for people in the land care business.
Yeah, the Accredited Organic Land Care Program, AOLCP.
Spoken like a president.
Someone who said it a thousand times in the last year. That program is a real, I think, jewel here in Connecticut. And part of what is powerful about it and challenging about it is that it is essentially a nationally known program that is housed within our small Connecticut chapter of the Organic Farming Association. And it is in line with what I said earlier, it is really seeking common purpose in land stewardship between the organic farming community and the Atlantic and the organic land care community. So we train landscapers, and as we offer these courses in organic land care, and also there are many master gardeners and homeowners who attend that course as well to get accredited. But what we are finding is that people are flying in from Texas, from Ohio, from everywhere to take these courses that we're offering. It's a really stellar program and very forward-thinking. And so I think in the next couple of years, as we look to develop stronger regional partnerships, that class will be offered around the Northeast as well. So we'll be in New Hampshire and Rhode Island and New Jersey, I hope, this year.
Great. Well, in closing, in the probably 20 to 22 of the 28 years I've been doing this program and working with NOFA, I have not let a broadcast go by without mentioning the D word, Bill Dusing. And Bill is gone, sadly. You guys were kind enough to invite me to sort of the final party down there in Westport, I think it was. But Bill's legacy lives on with a scholarship program.
It's an award program, and yes, you said it absolutely well. He is gone, but he is not gone. He is in every workshop today, and the award ceremony that will happen in the middle of the day celebrates the people who best, or among the people who best embody his commitment to this movement. He is our founder, and he is with us always.
Yeah. So let people know how to get in touch with you again if they want to learn more about NOFA and anything that you could do for them and how they can help you.
The easiest way is our website, ctnofa.org, and we will see you hopefully at our programs throughout the growing year.
Dina Brewster is Executive Director of NOFA Connecticut. We're here at 2020 Organic Con at Wesleyan University. Dina, thanks so much.
Thank you.
We're here with Shannon Rader Ginsburg, and she is with the Connecticut Farm to School program. They are here exhibiting and speaking at NOFA's 2020 Organicon at Wesleyan University. So, Shannon, we've heard a little bit about the Connecticut Farm to School initiatives at previous NOFA and other conferences. Tell me a little bit and explain to the folks that are listening what the movement is all about.
So I work with UConn Extension Put Local on Your Tray, which is one of a number of organizations in Connecticut that is working to connect farms and schools in all the different ways that having local food and education around local food and gardening, just all the positive outcomes that come from farm-to-school programs. We're just one of many programs. The most recent development in Connecticut has been the coalescing of the Connecticut Farm to School Network, which Put Local on Your Tray is a member of, along with the State Department of Education, Food Corps, a lot of other nonprofits and organizations that do environmental and food work. And this is forming as a coalition to help promote all the different work that can go on, whether it's procurement, school gardens, education in the classroom, community development, to really create a supported network between schools and farms to just lift up and promote and resource farm to school. There's lots of different ways to resource farm to school, and whether it is just low education and trying to figure out how to get over these road bumps that can slow down procurement and education, all the different demands, yeah, you know, on schools and children, to really just create a food and agriculturally literate community where, you know, we're just feeling connected around food, health, nutrition, local agriculture, diversified agriculture, sustainable agriculture, and sustainable communities.
Yeah. What's really thrilling for me is it really seems like it was only 5 or 6 years ago where most of the conversation was about we can't wait to the point where we can get farm fresh food from down the street to the neighborhood schools. Although it was happening in strategic little points, this movement seems to have really exploded along with kind of the farm-to-table initiatives in commercial restaurants. it really only makes sense. But you have that added component where you can actually start these children very, very young, thinking about actually putting something in the ground and taking it all the way to the point where it's in their on their dinner table. Where do you see this movement going now? Where are we at here in Connecticut in terms of the percentage or the proportion of schools that are already catching on to this?
So from our perspective at the TRE program, and with the Connecticut Farm School Collaborative, there is a real spark in Connecticut. A lot of school food service directors are starting to really understand that this is achievable. You know, we're not talking about putting all local food all on every tray every day, but where are the entry points to start bringing fresh, healthy food? The food service directors are very interested in feeding our children well. And in fact, you know, one of the, you know, kind of waves of the food movement isn't to just make local or sustainably grown food sort of a niche, but that this is a food justice issue, that this is something that all school children benefit from, and that school communities across demographics want good, healthy, fresh food for their children. And one of the best equitable ways to deliver this food to our kids and to bring education about health and nutrition and how delicious a local carrot is or a crunchy cucumber is through the schools. The more children and families that participate in public schools and that participate in lunch programs brings resources into the schools, which they then bring out to bring and improve their school food. So I think we're seeing a real groundswell in farm to school, because it's not just about we need thousands of pounds of this product to put on all of our school plates, but that it's connected to community and it's connected to food justice and it's connected to access and equity, and it's really connected to where can we do this when we can do it so that and we have all kinds of schools. Right now, Put Local on Your Train has over half the districts in Connecticut participating in the pledge to serve local on their tray at some point in some way. And that's across urban, rural, you know, all kinds of small districts, large districts. We're really seeing all kinds of schools and all sorts of food service directors interested in this.
And every time a new school comes online, there's another 100, 500,000 kids that are bringing the inspiration home. And this is having a positive impact on community and public health, too. I mean, this is it's like with fire prevention. You know, it's like this whole thing, you know, during fire prevention week, and then everybody's doing fire drills. Now that they're eating and growing, in many cases, their own food, they're bringing this whole thing home and teaching, like, older generations and kind of reacquainting them with the beauty of this whole movement.
Yeah, I mean, this is something that when kids, you know, this has been proven time over again, when kids participate in a little bit of a garden project, they're willing, they're much more excited to eat, try something, try a taste test, you know, eating a little cup of something, doing a taste comparison versus like, here's a huge spoonful on your tray, like really introducing students and giving them the power to try it or not, giving them a voice and to say whether they like it or not, getting kids out into the garden. And this is something we definitely want to see across Connecticut. Parents, caregivers love it. Like, you know, we hear stories all the time saying my kid tried this or that, or now they're curious, they want to eat this or that. And increasing fresh vegetable consumption and just being curious and food literate about what they're eating, you know, is a big part of the goal. It's not just about kind of preaching about like this type of food is better for you or not, but broadening this experience and this message of empowerment about what you're eating and connection to what you're eating, because it does have this very powerful community benefit that connects people.
If there's a parent or educator whose school or community is not yet engaged in this movement, how can they learn more about Connecticut Farm to School?
Oh, what a nice question. So they can find our program at Put Local on Your Tray at UConn. The Connecticut Farm to School Collaborative has a website. So if you Google Connecticut Farm to School Collaborative and reach out and say, I'm interested, I'm curious, I want to know more. I think the approach is not to, you know, the school food providers they do want to give kids the best food. They really do. And they have a lot on their plate, no pun intended, to provide, to do that. So, you know, become an enabler, become an activator, you know, look for the opportunities rather than just focusing on all the challenges. But reach out to us. Come find us.
From Organicon 2020 here at Wesleyan University, Shannon Rader Ginsburg is with the Connecticut Farm to School System. Thank you, Shannon. Coming to you from Wesleyan University here in Connecticut for the very first time, Organicon 2020 with the Northeast Organic Farming Association, and we are pleased to discover the keynote speaker for today, Niaz Dori, who is here talking today. We're going to find out all about it. The thing that impressed me was that Time magazine named Niaz as a hero for the planet for the work she is doing. So, yes, thank you so much for talking with us. And what brings you here today to the middle of the middle of the state of Connecticut?
Well, thanks for talking with me. Yeah. I'm here because NOFA Connecticut has expressed interest in connecting the dots between our land food system and our seafood system. And I've spent the last 25 years working on fisheries and seafood, and particularly organizing in fishing communities. But from the get-go, what really caught my eye about fisheries was the similarities that it had with farming, from what I knew from before about the struggles of family farmers and the takeover of our land food system by industrialization and agribusiness. It all rang familiar, and it's one of the reasons why I was motivated to work on fisheries issues to begin with. And that work has really inspired me to continue to build that bridge between land and sea. And 2 years ago, I began serving in a dual role, not only as the director of the organization that I've been working with for over 10 years, Northwest Atlantic Marine Alliance, but also as the director of the National Family Farm Coalition. So we really are now bringing the farmers and fishermen together in a much more formal way.
Well, Connecticut has such an incredibly strong aquaculture community and industry, especially with its oysteries. So that is something that I have always had a great interest in as an agricultural reporter, because I always saw it as as one hand in the other. I guess a lot of people don't, but can you tell me where in the world it is closest to perfect in terms of that kind of overlap that you're so inspired to try to make happen?
I think where in the world the connection between land and sea is more vivid is actually in some indigenous communities, where they have had to live within the ecosystems, and they have thousands of years of experience with a diversified approach to feeding themselves and honoring the ecosystems within which they live, whether it's freshwater fisheries or marine fisheries, and the building in of some hatchery element or some aquaculture element into rice paddies in for instance, in indigenous Japanese communities has been very long-standing traditions. Where we are on the verge of screwing it up, however, is this promise of abundance, whether it's around aquaculture or around commercial fisheries in general, of assuming that we can scale things up. And when we scale things up, we have a tendency to create tomorrow's problems. Right now, we're seeing a lot of interest in aquaculture. But the problem is that we're seeing it as how can we expand it, as opposed to how can we contain it in a way that's scale appropriate. So we're seeing companies like Cargill, for instance, being interested in industrialization of the aquaculture sector. So it's really important to look at Connecticut's example as a way to preserve small, mid-scale, appropriate aquaculture facilities that are enhancing our food system, not usurping all the power and profit and undermining the ecosystems within which they're existing.
How about here in the United States? Are you seeing any really progressive areas as much as your observations of what's happening here in Connecticut are wonderful. We're a relatively tiny piece of the coastline with a tiny population of people who are engaged comparatively. Is there anywhere that this is starting to move in the right direction on a larger scale while maintaining that kind of arm's length from the industrialization and those who want to move in that direction?
Are you specifically talking about aquaculture or the marriage
or the synergy between land and sea?
Yeah, well, pushing the synergy point between land and sea is very young in its growth. We as NAMA started to really push that envelope only 10 years ago. So when we think about it in from a time perspective, we're barely crawling. But the fact that we've been invited into the space that has been dominated by farming conversations to say we want to also hear about fishing is one of those steps. The fact that NAMA and National Family Farm Coalition are coming together to build on that synergy through the shared leadership model is another signal. The fact that we have this is growing connection that we're making with family farm organizations, farm worker organizations, those are all the steps we've taken over the last 10 years in order to get us to this point where the only thing that we eat that actually has the word food in it is now invited into food-related conversations. Mm. So it's too early to say where are we seeing it really show up, because we've just been pushing it into the conversation just in the past 10 years. And if I thought about it in terms of human growth, it's an infant still. Mm,
yeah. Are you feeling the gradually greater embrace of the land farming community? I mean, when you sit down and look them in the eye and talk to them for 5 minutes, are they seeing that it's just sort of the same end result, just underwater instead of planted in the ground?
Absolutely. I think when farmers and fishermen get together in the same room, they realize how much they have in common, both in terms of opportunities and struggles, and what are the barriers in their way are not that different. Corporate consolidation, lack of fair prices, lack of access to essential resources and infrastructure, as well as some of the innovations that are emerging. Community-supported fisheries was modeled after community-supported agriculture. Mm. Some of the institutional purchasing models that were seeded through the agriculture movement are now spreading to the water side. So there is a lot there that we're seeing excitement around. And the important thing is for both populations to realize that they're not isolated.
I'm so glad I ran into you. And thank you so much for taking some time here at NOFA 2020 here at Wesleyan University. Niaz Dori, the keynote speaker this morning. Really, as we are hearing, talking about some exciting news that her organization has been on the forefront of now for this 10-year period. And I'm sure we'll be hearing a lot more about it. Niaz, thank you.
Thank you so much.
Do you volunteer for or receive services from any of the hundreds of nonprofits, agencies, community groups, or grassroots organizations in our region? Or maybe you're just looking for ways to help. If your favorite nonprofit is hosting an awareness or fundraising activity, or you'd like to find one that's supporting a nonprofit in your neighborhood, just go to our radio station website, hit the events tab, and find out how to promote it, or discover some of the many causes supported by Connoisseur Media. I'm John Boquette, your public affairs director here at Connoisseur Media, and we'll be back to our Independence Day weekend encore broadcast from NOFA's 2020 OrganiCon conference on the award-winning For the People right after this news. Hey, with ongoing high temperatures and minimal rainfall in recent weeks, Aquarian Water Company is asking customers to reduce non-essential water use. Large portions of Connecticut are currently experiencing conditions ranging from abnormally dry to moderate drought due to an extended dry spell. And because of high water demands, customers may experience temporary low water pressure and/or possible water discoloration. These issues will resolve themselves as water usage returns to normal levels. However, all Aquarian customers are asked to voluntarily restrict their use of water, particularly in relation to outdoor irrigation. To get all the useful water conservation tips you need to help conserve water for everyone, visit aquarionwater.com/ Conserve. You're now joining an encore presentation of the award-winning For the People, which was recorded earlier this year live at the 2020 Northeast Organic Farming Association's Organicon 2020.
All right. As soon as you walk in the door here at Organicon 2020, you will walk into the smiling face of Diane Blaze. She's a district conservationist with the United States Department of Agriculture, the big guys, I guess we call them in the farming industry. And she is here promoting something called the Conservation Stewardship Program, and she is with the Natural Resource Conservation Service. So, first of all, tell us about the puzzle piece that NRCS is in the bigger kind of picture of the USDA.
Sure. So our agency works directly with farmers and forest landowners to do conservation work on their property that could include financial and technical assistance.
And what is the Conservation Stewardship Program the kind of the main focus that you're promoting here today?
Well, we're promoting several programs, anything from just technical assistance to helping people do conservation on their property to some of our other financial assistance programs. But it really all comes down to basic conservation planning on the farm, and then we try to fit in which programs are appropriate for their specific farm. We work more one-on-one to try to figure out what their specific needs are and then fit in the programs that are appropriate.
Tell me about a couple of the things that are really kind of getting hold and getting traction here under your watch in Connecticut.
Sure. Soil health is the big thing right now. Everybody's interested in improving the quality and the growth potential of their soils and sustainability of how they're farming so that they can keep production going in a healthy manner for their farm. So anything from crop rotation to incorporating cover crops, growing pollinator and beneficial insectary plots so that they can manage pests a little more effectively. Those are a few of the things, irrigation water management, nutrient management in their soils, erosion control. We do a lot of things.
Interestingly, that is a crossover point in something I've been working on a little more intensely in the broader picture of my reporting, because there's a farm in another area where I work that recently received a fantastic conservation easement that specifically came about, or at least protections against development on the property because of the quality of their soil. And that is such an interesting thing that when you kind of think about the food that you're eating, you tend to think about from the seed up, but you don't tend to think about the ground that it goes in.
Exactly, yeah. And so the easement program that the state has is also in partnership with our agency, and they do give extra points when you have prime farm soil. So we do work to try to protect, and we always, every farm we go to, we look at the soil and try to figure out what works best to improve the quality of their soil.
Are there any USDA initiatives or NRCS initiatives that you feel have greater potential that are not being tapped as much as they might be able to, given the lay of the land here in Connecticut?
Sure. Well, a lot of people are familiar with the EQIP program. That's the Environmental Quality Incentives Program, and it brings in a lot of new customers, and we can work with people on some of the bigger issues they might be facing through erosion, et cetera. And we also have the Conservation Stewardship Program, which is available for people who are already good stewards of their land and want to take it a step further. So the stewardship program will analyze what they're doing, try to find any holes in their production methods, and then try to fill in those holes with different enhancements that they can do to take their farm to the next level.
So the candidates for this program are exclusively farmers?
Yes. So for those, you could either be a farm or a forest landowner. We also have a lot of forestry programs.
And like forest or land trusts, things like that, or is that outside the scope?
Absolutely. Those are within the scope. So any forest owner would be eligible.
Excellent. Well, how can people find out more about the specific programs that you're overseeing here in Connecticut?
Sure. Well, the USCA NRCS is actually nationwide, but you can go on the website and look for your local service center. We have 5 here in Connecticut, broken down by which county you're in.
So that is ct.nrcs.usda.gov?
Correct.
Excellent. Diane Blase is a district conservationist with the United States Department of Agriculture and their Natural Resources Conservation Service. Here from the, you could tell that the workshops got out. The traffic in the hall is getting loud here, but we're here at Organicon 2020 for NOFA. Thank you, Diane.
Thank you.
Well, we're enveloped in a little bit of quiet here as the traffic starts to build at Organicon 2020 here at Wesleyan University. And we're pleased to run into Brett Gilman, who's the president of the Wilton High School Garden Club, and Sephra Alexandra. She is a pollinator health tech with Connecticut NOFA and the lead on their EcoType project. So we're going to throw it to you first, Sephra. First of all, give us a quick kind of elevator spiel on the tie between NOFA and the EcoType project, and then give us a little bit more about what that project is trying to do.
Wonderful. Well, thanks for having us on. We're so glad that you're here. And CT NOFA, the Northeast Organic Farming Association, we really focus on how you can have the best organic yields on your farm. And so part of that is really through the lens of having native pollinator habitat. When we have the right pollinators on our farm, that increases our yields. And so what we want to do as working with these different organizations such as the Pollinator Pathways and all of these wonderful community-led organizations that are bringing people together to understand the importance of pollinators, is now we have to understand we want to plant pollinator plants, but where are we getting those plants and where does that seed come from? So in an effort to be able to make the right plants for the right place available, we have created the EcoType Project Initiative, which is an umbrella initiative that brings together botanists who collect the native wild seed together with organic farmers who grow out these founder plots, as we call them, of about 200 species. Then we collect that seed and propagate it with nurserymen who then can make it available for the residential and the restoration, agriculture, landscaping, all these different trades.
For almost 30 years that I've been doing this, I'm constantly having these moments of discovery and these aha moments. And this is one of them because it never occurred to me the difference that a native seeded plant could have on the pollinators that work with it, so to speak, work with the plant, versus a seed that is maybe grown somewhere else, whether organically or commercially.
Right, and so it's really interesting. You know, we don't want perfect to be the enemy of good, right? But what we're trying to promote with people, because now they're ready to hear and listen to this conversation, is there's things called ecoregions. And the EPA put out wonderful maps that show, instead of looking at the man-made delineations of we're Connecticut, we're Massachusetts, they did these habitat mosaics that says these are the ecological corridors where, so we're ecoregion 59, and what you look at is from about the tip of New York City almost to the bottom of Maine, genetics along that corridor really can all play well with each other and work well along those corridors. And so when we think back to, it's the same conversation that we had when we don't want monocultures in our field crops. It's the same thing with native plants. And I think that this is a really exciting way that people know that they're really doing great restoration, ecological restoration work in their lands just by what's locally around them and available. And it's really exciting. And we've gotten to partner with Wilton High School, who has an absolutely phenomenal horticulture program there led by their teacher, Jim Hunter. Mm. And we're here with Brett because they're working on making protocols for different high schools to all get involved. So I'd love for Brett to let people know about what they're doing.
Yeah. Well, Brett, I've been talking about this growing
Thank you.
Been talking about this growing movement of schools and students getting involved in having gardens at their schools. But I never really got an opportunity to talk to somebody who was kind of on the front lines of it in real time. When was the first time you got interested in, like, agriculture or gardening? Is this something that you kind of grew up with from childhood, or did you just more recently come to it?
So I've never grown up... I never grew up on a farm. My parents didn't own a farm. Mm-hmm. But I found myself always in an agricultural setting, whether it was through local community-shared agricultural systems or doing local... my town is a great local agriculturally-based camp. Mm-hmm. And as I got older and progressed through middle school and high school, found myself looking for more opportunities to explore agriculture in Wilton. And as I'm now a senior in high school, I've been involved in almost all of the agricultural and conservation organizations in my town. And this has blossomed into a passion that I look forward to exploring more in college.
Does it excite you to see the number of peers that are getting on board with this?
Yeah, it's really awesome because I'm just so proud of the fact that me being passionate about something inspires others to be passionate about that same thing. And I'm really kind of seeing a chain effect where people, my peers in the garden club, have come to me and said, I'm really glad that I'm part of this, and it really makes me feel good that I'm doing something better for my community.
So tell us what you got going on there at Wilton High School.
So we are the first high school in New Connecticut, and I believe also New England, to be part of the CT NOFA's EcoType project. We are actually we're involved in this project in several different ways. The first way is that we have some of these seeds, such as Job Highweed and New York Ironweed, and we're growing those native seeds to be produced for local open spaces so that we can restore those ecosystems. In addition, we've also partnered with Planters Choice Nursery in Newtown, Connecticut, to have a plant sale for our community, for the Fairfield County community, and all of the homeowners that want to buy native plants for their yards. Because the idea is that if everybody could plant a native plant in their yard, then we could really link up all of these fragmented habitats and create green corridors across areas that are even used by humans. So we're having a plant sale. You can pre-order several different species of native plants. It's open to the public. You can go to whsorganicgarden.weebly.com to find the order form there. And the plant sale, well, the pickup day for the plant sale will be on May 9th. So
it's a pre-order pickup. It's not a go-and-browse type situation.
It is not a go-and-browse situation. It is by pre-order only.
But he has created an absolutely gorgeous website that not only has pictures of the species available, but what the beneficial host insects are that they provide for and what their different planting characteristics are. I think the exciting thing is this is just the beginning of this project, because right now we're dealing with mostly, forbs and wetland plants. But what the important thing is when we think about pollinators, right, this one great woman at a presentation said, when you invite guests over to your house, you can't just feed them on Monday. You got to feed them for the whole week that they're there. Sure. So when we have pollinator plants that are only spring blooming or fall blooming, what we need to do is make sure that in our gardens, we're planting that for things that bloom all year round, because our friends, the bugs, need to eat all year round. So as we're doing that, we want to make sure that we're addressing all the different bloom times, as well as you look at the different what are called trophic layers. So instead of the monoculture, we talk about perennial polycultures, or better known as our forests, right? So we want to make sure that we're addressing each of the layers. We have the ground covers and the shrubs and the vines and the trees. And as Doug Tallamy speaks so eloquently about why native plants are so important, if you think of the oak tree, they're host to over 200 different species of caterpillars. Why is that important? Because our songbirds, when they're trying to feed their young, need to feed on multitudes of the high-protein caterpillars. Mm-hmm. So And then you know, those are harbingers of our entire ecological system.
Right.
Maybe it's harbinger all, is not the right word.
All part of the big, huge, massive million piece puzzle of the natural ecostructure here in Connecticut, right?
Right. It's amazing. And I say to all people, you know, it's too late to be pessimistic. Seeds are so positive. You plant one seed, the next year you get 1,000. Anna Mockery, our good friend the wind, will help proliferate those seeds all over the landscape. And I just encourage all of you, when you look out into your lawns, it says, what about the edges of your residential areas? Is there a place maybe where you can implement these wild landscapes? Because I think you will all be so delighted to see the dragonflies and the butterflies and all of these beautiful creatures who, just like in what they call, you know, proverbial food wastelands, we can't call them deserts anymore because deserts are thriving ecosystems. Sure. We need to do the same for our bugs.
Yeah. And Brett, it also must be pretty exciting not only to be the first school to be involved in this in the Ecotype project, but also to be in a community environment that's so receptive and cooperative to joining in the effort.
Yeah, it's really awesome. I like to say that Wilton has a very rich agricultural heritage.
Sure.
And even though it might not look like a farming community today, we have several different farming and conservation organizations throughout town that most of our community loves to stay in touch with and be a part of. It means a lot to them.
Yeah. Inspiring conversation here with Sephra Alexandra. She is a point person for the Ecotype Project and a pollinator health tech for Connecticut NOFA, and really pleased to make the acquaintance of Brett Gilman. He's president of the Wilton High School Garden Club, Wilton High School, the first high school in Connecticut as part of the Ecotype Project. So thanks, guys.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Well, as excitement continues to build here at Wesleyan University from Organicon 2020, the Northeast Organic Farming Association's annual conference, we ran into Stephanie Berluti. She is with the New Connecticut Farm Alliance, which isn't that new. I've been hearing about it for a couple of years, but I'm not sure that we've had a chance to talk with anybody about it, Stephanie. For folks listening, tell them a little bit about what it's all about.
Sure. So the New Connecticut Farmers Alliance is the Connecticut chapter of the National Young Farmers Coalition, and we mostly focus on providing educational training assistance to new farmers that are just starting out in farming, whether it be straight out of college, you know, you're starting off as your first career, or this is a second career. We don't discriminate on age with that term. So throughout Connecticut, we've mostly been a social networking organization in the past few years, providing three in-person larger meetings and then smaller potlucks throughout the summer for our farmers to get together, share some stories. But now we're really focusing on doing more policy work throughout the Connecticut. So we're focusing on working on getting a healthy soil bill passed, working on farmers' rights without the state, and also promoting some more diversity training for farmers.
So do you come at the Alliance coming from farming heritage or from academics, or inspired you to be involved with this organization?
I have been farming for the last, I would say, 4 years around the country, and I'm coming back to Connecticut because I have land here. And I've run into a lot of issues within the past year, you know, getting started, trying to access either just resources, trying to find who's who. And so I joined the Alliance, one, also to have resources for myself, but also I find that working on a land on a small farm, which I have, I'm a little bit isolated, and I don't really get to communicate with other farmers throughout the season. So being with Alliance, it kind of gets me out of the farm, really spreading awareness and also just sharing stories with other farmers and just gaining knowledge from my community.
Where's your farm?
It's right outside New Haven in Orange. So it's the first year, South Haven Farm, and we're going to be growing under half an acre of organic lettuce, roots, specialty greens, and things like that.
And do you have a client base, or are you selling direct to the public?
I have one or two chefs in Manhattan that I'm mostly going to be selling to, but it's mostly going to be the first year, just family and friends, just word of mouth, and wholesale to restaurants mostly.
So who would you invite to be part of this group?
Any new farmer that's just getting out of either their high school at VOAG program or college. Also, a lot of farmers that are making the transition from farm worker to farm owner. This is a really great program and a great organization to be involved in, because a lot of the farmers that we have are within their first 5 years. So to be able to have that resource of what to do and what not to do in your first year is really important. We're also really trying to focus on filling the gap between when you graduate high school and those VOAG programs, and also how to find a profitable career in farming. To really bridge that gap between, high school and then farm ownership, or also just, profitable farm employment.
So I was under the impression that Connecticut is actually a pretty good place for somebody who wants to start a farm, because there are a lot of resources, including some financial resources that can be tapped here. That Connecticut is a pretty friendly environment for new or upcoming farmers to kind of put their shovel in the ground for the first time.
I would definitely agree. Because we are such a, I would say, densely populated area, and because Connecticut, we are blessed in the sense that a lot of the people that live here are more aware of what they're eating and do have the resources to buy local and organic. And also a lot of the farmers have the benefit of being so close to Manhattan and being close to the city, or also even being close to Boston, where they can sell their produce to a larger city and a larger population. I would say, yes, Connecticut, we do have a lot of resources that are available. Unfortunately, in Connecticut, I think one of the biggest hurdles we have to get through is affordable farmland. A lot of young farmers are finding that their main obstacle is being able to get on land, because a lot of the farmland that's available, it's not being sold at ag value. It's being sold at, commercial or residential value, and a lot of people just can't afford it.
Well, I was going to ask what new Connecticut Farm Alliance was tackling from a policy perspective, and it sounds like you introduced the subject.
Yeah. So our main focus is this year, and we did a poll within our membership at our Hootenanny last week. Affordable farmland is definitely always one of our main priorities, and we're working with organizations like Land for Good to get our farmers matched up, or just really open up conversation of how to start the process of looking at farmland, whether it be leasing or renting, and also being a middleman or being a person that can connect to the resources when it comes to also, if you're setting up a lease, or if you're, working with a landowner and how to do things like that. Number one, again, affordable farmland. We're also looking at, affordable health care for farmers. That's always, always big priority on our list. And also, our members have also voiced their opinion that, fighting for workers' rights in Connecticut is very, very important. And one of the main goals that we are doing some work on is working on creating a comprehensive soil health bill. So a lot of surrounding states, I think New York and Massachusetts, have passed bills that are really... they benefit farmers in the sense that you do get credits for doing things like cover cropping and crop rotation and really maintaining your soil in a healthy, sustainable way. And we're trying to really work to write language to get that passed in Connecticut.
In closing, is there something that you didn't know or weren't as aware of that you became aware of or were able to kind of integrate into what you're doing as a result of you becoming a part of the new Connecticut Farm Alliance?
I think one thing that I've always I've always struggled with, and what I'm finding also and what's really beneficial for me personally, and what we're also going to be working on as a organization, is providing some introductory policy training. So I'm very new to working with the government and working with getting pills passed and working with other organizations. So I think what we're going to be working on is setting up one-day training for our members to get more active in your local government, to get more active in the state of Connecticut. So really just being unaware of how the whole process works is new to me. And I think that through my own struggle and trying to read bills and trying to get through that bureaucracy, I think with that, we're going to be really, I'm not the only one that has struggled with that, so we're going to then be building a course on that for our steering committee and our leaders in the group, but also for our members as well, so they can empower themselves.
So how can folks that are listening learn more?
You can visit us at newconnecticutfarmers.com. Also find us on Instagram at newctfarmers. And any questions, you can always email us at that same Gmail account at newctfarmers@gmail.com.
And it must feel great to be a farmer in a community where a farmer is depicted on your town seal,
though,
in orange, right? Tell people how they can learn more about your farm.
So my farm is still just starting up, but you can find me on Instagram at South Haven Farm. Again, we're right outside New Haven in Orange, and I hope to be serving the New Haven community and all the way down the Metro North line. So. Great. Yeah, find me.
Stephanie Berluti, a new friend to the award-winning For the People here, representing the New Connecticut Farm Alliance and her own farm enterprise there in Orange, Connecticut, here from Organicon 2020 with the Northeast Organic Farmers Association. Stephanie, thank you.
Thank you so much.
You've been listening to our award-winning public affairs program, For the People. The opinions expressed on this broadcast represent those of our guests and host. If you have a suggestion for an issue, a guest, or a PSA relevant to the audience and community served by our radio station, you must make a request for consideration in writing to me via email at john.voquette@connoisseurct.com. We do not accept pitches or requests for coverage by phone. Remember, no part of this program may be copied, disseminated, or rebroadcast. Our public file detailing the many critical community and state issues addressed on For the People can be reviewed upon request during normal business hours at 440 Wheeler's Farms Road in Milford or on our station website. Our theme music is by Rick Miller and Scott's, with original music by Noel Viette. I'm Director of Public Affairs, John Voquette. Join us again this time next week for more conversation and information on the award-winning For the People. And don't forget, you can listen to this and other For the People podcasts anytime on iTunes or under the podcast tab on our station's website. Until this time next week, thanks for listening.